I'd like to reconvene the Senate Committee on Healthcare and Veterans Affairs. I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2506. You want to remind us what that is?
Sure. Madam Chair, 2506 requires health plans to cover services of professional counselors and marriage and family therapists if certain other services are covered by the plan. There was a Dash 5 amendment that we adopted last week. There's also a current fiscal and revenue Dash 5, so everything is in order.
Okay, let's open a work session on 2506, and we have adopted the A5 amendments. Is that correct?
That's five we adopted last time.
Okay,
so
and
all we need to do is do the bill.
Okay.
Right? Okay, Madam Chair, I move House Book 2506 to for the passed recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2506 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? All right, clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates.
Excused.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
Senator Moore.
No.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chairman Anderson.
Aye. Motion passes, and Senator Morissette, would you carry this bill? And I'll close the work session on House Bill 2506, and I'll open a work session on House Bill 3097.
3097, House Bill directs Department of Human Services to adopt rules to allow emergency medical technicians applicants to substitute experience and certification by the National Registry of Emergency Medical Technicians for certain requirements imposed by the department. We heard this bill last week, and there were no amendments at that time.
And colleagues, we know that the Oregon State Paramedic Association is opposed to this bill. I've talked with each of you, and I will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3097 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3097 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator
Bates?
Aye. Senator Morissette? Aye.
I know what
you're voting on.
That's why I said aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. And I forget who's going to carry this bill. Just a minute, I forgot to write it down. And who would like to carry this bill?
Two of them. Oh, I will.
Yeah, Senator Cruz will carry this bill.
Maybe the only chance I get today.
Yeah. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 3097, and I'd like to open a actual work session on House Bill 2589. Would you remind us?
Madam Chair, House Bill 2589 was heard this morning. Requires health benefit plans to provide coverage for hearing aids for enrollees under 18 years of age. There are no amendments.
John Powell, do you want to just briefly tell us where the insurers stand on this?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. Madam Chair and committee, Regents has been neutral on this bill. As you know, PEB has a similar benefit worked into its contract, and so we feel confident that the pricing information that was given to you is accurate. We're always concerned on mandates that the pricing of devices and or drugs and or procedures that are mandated tend to go up. So we'll be keeping an eye on that and negotiating very, very hard for good consumer pricing for these aids.
All right. Yes.
Just a quick question. That was exactly what I was hoping you'd say. I didn't prep you for that, okay?
No, you didn't.
Some of these devices are extremely expensive. I've seen them up to $5,000 or $6,000 a piece. And not over the price that high, but getting the consumer to the right one is really important. And since we'll be buying more of them in the future, maybe we can get a little better price break on it. Okay?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, I think that's a very, very good point. And one of the things I learned at the barber shop not long ago was my barber is in the market for hearing aids, and he said he was fortunate to have discussion with some of his customers who use hearing aids, and he found that they are much like buying a car. You don't pay sticker. And
really?
They are very high priced and sometimes with a very high margin.
I would hope your expertise from Regis would drive those costs down and maybe look at a pool we could buy from instead of just everyone on their own.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Powell. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 0.007%, and you concur with that?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Morris, yes, I think that pricing is probably accurate.
Put that into gross dollars in the insured market.
I can't remember. That probably the easiest way to do that offhand would be to estimate the number. There wasn't a number given I think there was an estimate of how many people would get it, and I can't remember offhand. But 0.007% for Regents of billion would probably be about right.
Whatever that is.
Yeah.
Do you have a calculator?
0.0007
of 1 billion.
Only a billion? Well, shoot. It's not like it's real money.
Dr. Bates is checking it on his calculator.
I'm not sure my calculator goes to a billion, but we're going to try.
It won't go that far.
No, mine won't.
Yeah, well, it won't go that high. So.
Okay.
But I can adjust it. It was 0.007?
Mm-hmm.
So,
0.007 of 1
billion. Yeah, so it's 0.007.
Of 1 billion.
Of 1 billion.
Yeah, you can do it by hand better than I can do it by hand.
Is that 70 million?
Like about 70 million.
It is one of the difficulties in discussing these issues because in percentage terms, it seems quite small, but you know the universe is very large. So it's a small percentage of a very large number.
It might be 7 million.
Is it 7?
No, I think it's 7.
700,000.
No, I think it's 7.
No, it's
7
probably
million.
7.
$7 million.
Probably
then,
7 million.
And then
yes, it
to
is.
Take the total market share would be probably 12
mm-hmm.
billion.
Yeah.
7 million.
So B as in boy, so it would get up to that 70.
About 70 million.
$70 million. And if I may, Madam Chair, just the testimony this morning was absolutely compelling. I just came from a meeting with the business folks from my district, one of whom has dropped insurance coverage, can't afford it. House Bill 2002 did him in. He had a 43% increase. And, these are wonderful, wonderful things to add, but they're mandates that increase the cost of an already unsustainable cost structure for businesses. So that's my dilemma. I could vote with my heart all day long, but somehow I have to connect it to my head.
And it's too bad this is focused on the small group and individual insurers, correct?
Madam Chair, it would apply to anybody who is purchasing a fully insured plan, whether they're large or small.
You may not believe me or make you feel any better, or maybe make you feel worse. We've got some early preliminary studies indicating that mandates, in fact, do not drive up health care premiums. It's utilization and the way we go about applying health care. That's what's driving costs through the roof and hospital costs. And that's the real cost driver. So if you really move to primary and preventative care, you know, it's not the mandates, it's the primary preventative care being lacking in our society that's doing it in extremely high costs in the hospital, for which there for a whole bunch of reasons. And I'll try to get information to you. I actually got it from an insurance broker, of all people. He started out with the attitude that mandates were driving up health premium costs. You know what I'm talking about, Kelsey Woods. Mm-hmm. And he sent me a long letter saying after he investigated it, he's now convinced, and he's an insurance broker, that mandates are not the problem. But the problem is multiple factor other things, but that is not the major driver, which really surprised me.
There is a nexus there, Senator, and I would say that the more we mandate, the more is utilized.
Yes, but I may be wrong, but the way I understood what he told me was it's not the mandates, it's the utilization over those mandates. It's just grown exponentially.
I view it in a different light. I take a look at a baby like the Ben that we had in here this morning, who had his hearing aid put in, I think, at 4 months of age. I think that's what they said. And it will help his development and his speech. And that has effects that we can't even consider what effects it'll have on society. Regarding his ability to learn and to be a productive citizen. So, and we can't really capture those costs.
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Do you keep track of colonoscopies and how much they cost?
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, you kind of twisted my tongue with that one. I'm sure there is a way to probably program the computer to pull out that code.
Yeah, well, and what I'm
it's not something that the CEO sat around and give a daily report.
Well, I mean, my feeling is that if you give the test and you are used, a lot of the mandates are relatively small in terms of, well, they add up. But if you factor in what you end up spending when they get to the point where they need that major surgery or the treatment that is caused by something that wasn't caught in time, that seems to me, you know, to justify doing the early detection. And this gets into the size of the pool. If we had a healthcare for all pool, then we would be taking care of everybody at a lesser price.
Yeah, right.
Well,
it's a bigger discussion than this.
I know. Well,
I
mean,
but a good book.
Okay. Well, with that, we are in a work session.
So you want to move the bill? I'm assuming.
So, Senator Bates.
I would move the House Bill 25. What's the number? 2589 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Bates moves House Bill 2589 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. I just wanted you to know that I know that Sarah, I think it was Sarah who testified, who wanted to consider an amendment, and Mr. Powell had indicated that dependent coverage was already in statute at this point.
Madam Chair, members, John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. No, dependents are covered if they're going to school up to age, usually it's age 24. But this bill that's before you caps the benefit at age 18. So what the young lady was asking for was an amendment that would extend to dependent status if you're going to school up to age 24.
Okay.
And I told the family that I would, if it couldn't be done this session, I would work with them in the future, because that kind of makes sense to me. If you're going to have this in the policy that when they go to school to higher education with all those costs, then they have this cost as well. And so it would probably be likely be just a one more transaction for a hearing aid at that age.
Okay. If you don't mind, committee, I'd like Mr. Powell to work on an amendment with Mr. Shook on that very issue.
Good.
And then we will bring this back next
26.
The 26th.
Next Tuesday.
Okay. Could you do that?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Do I have to take an action?
No. We're fine.
Well, he needs to withdraw his motion.
Did you make a motion? Yes,
Madam Chair, I withdraw my motion to pass Bill House Bill 2589. Move it to the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Senator Bates. All right, with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2589. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2058.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2058A standardizes health professional regulatory boards. We have in your packet amendments 7, 8, 9, and 10.
Okay. All right, let's start with the A7s. That's a very straightforward one. In fact, we could actually go into work session, so I'm going to close the public hearing and go into work session on Senate Bill 2058. And the A7s basically just changes the name of the Oregon Acupuncture Association, or changes Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine Society of Oregon, and insert Oregon Association of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine, and it deletes Oregon Acupuncture Association.
Madam Chair, I move the dash A7 amendment to House Bill 2058.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves the dash A7s to House Bill 2058. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. The dash A8s came from the Oregon Medical Board. And is there someone here that can address that, Kathleen? And just walk us through the amendment, if you could do that.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kathleen Haley, and I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Medical Board. The dash A8, Section 5 is, take it, the first section, Sub 1, from 677235, comes from the A engrossed and is not changed. That's the true all the way down until you get to the second page. No, excuse me. All of that comes from the A engrossed until you get to. Let's check here. I want to get to the public piece. Page 2, sorry.
Of the
dash A8.
It's a wonder.
So this basically replaces Section 5.
Right. It lifts all of it out, and the change is that the spouse, domestic partner, child, parent, or sibling.
Line, oh, yeah, I see. Mm-hmm.
Line 19, mm-hmm. 18, 19, page 2. Spouse, domestic partner, child, parent, or sibling of a public member may be employed as a health professional. So it's they cannot be a health professional. Mm-hmm. What we took out is that health-related industry as too broad a clause, mm-hmm. and really left the governor in making the appointments mm-hmm. Very little choice. And then it continues that the public members continue to be members of the investigative committee of the board.
Okay. And I think that was basically the only change. Is that correct?
There is another change on page 3, line 15, and that is that the member of the board may not serve more than 2 consecutive terms. So it doesn't allow for additional reappointments.
Oh, and you were in favor of that?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Yes?
This is a question. It's a general one, but I'm going to direct it to you because you've had this for a long time. I am concerned about the 3-year term.
We have another amendment for that.
I hope it's not a 2-year term.
No. But address that, because they've always liked a 3-year term.
I personally, I'm just thinking of the complexity of some of these boards. A 4-year term, to me, always felt it was more appropriate. and people take at least a year to usually get up to speed, and they spend 2 or 3 years doing it, a job nobody wants to do in this one, but others they might feel differently about. And then 2 terms, you've done 8 years, you've done your duty, you can get off and go do something else with your life. But do you like 3 years better than 4 years?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, in 1997, the legislature changed it from 4 years to 3 years, primarily at the request of the Medical Association and the board. Our board members have expressed that they felt 8 years was just too much. You're absolutely right that it takes at least a year to get up to speed. But I went back and did a little research, and when it was four-year terms, in a seven-year period, 50% of the members didn't go for a second term. And we haven't seen that with the three-year terms. So our members are expressing that they feel like 6 years is...
all they can take.
All they can do.
Not a bad consideration.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. So maybe my perception's wrong. I would say that I probably should be looking at 3 years.
Well, we have an amendment that we will discuss in just a little bit.
Okay. Thank you for your insight. Right. Thank you very much.
No, it does. It changes all those.
It's a bloody awful job. Nobody wants to do this.
There's three. Yeah.
We should be looking.
Okay, we have the A8s before us.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 8 amendment to House Bill 2058.
Senator Cruz moves a House Bill, moves the A8s into House Bill 2058. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. And now we go to the A9s, and the Board of Nursing could not be here, but basically they wanted to just change on page 8, delete part of the line and then insert that a public member could not be a relative spouse, you know, related to anyone licensed by the board. So that included CNAs, RNs, and LPNs. That got to the same issue that the Oregon Medical Board just put before us. And then there was an item left out that we added back in, that the governor shall strive to balance the representation according to geographic areas of the state and ethnic groups. So is there any questions on this?
Madam Chair, I move the Dash A9 amendment to House Bill 2058.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves the Dash A9s to House Bill 2058. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. And now this is the A10s before you, because as we know, in talking with Representative Greenlick, he wanted everything standardized, and so he changed all of the boards back to so that they would have three-year terms. And as you know, the dentists came before us, and they truly did like a four-year term. And I want you to know that in this amendment, and I did talk to Representative Greenlick regarding this, that the occupational therapists had a four-year, the Board of Clinical Social Workers had a four-year, the Board of Dentistry had a four-year, and the Board of Massage Therapists had a four-year, and the Physical Therapists had a four-year, as well as the Board of Respiratory Therapists and the Board of Pharmacy. So what this amendment does is just change all of those 3 years back to a four-year, since that is what they as an institution preferred. And it's just up to the committee whether you want to put that amendment in, or if you would prefer to have every board have the same three-year term.
Madam Chair, just it's interesting because the LC draft, every one says delete three and insert four, except for one that says restore four and delete three.
I'm not quite sure.
Where's the consistency?
Maybe they just got bored and needed to.
That's right.
Well, two of them say that.
So it's sort of up to you. I know that the Board of Dentistry would like to have this happen.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash A10 amendment to House Bill 2058.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash A10s into House Bill 2058. Is there any discussion?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think this speaks to Senator Bates's issue, and if these boards are comfortable with their current term of office, I'm not sure it's... I'm not sure that we're fixing something that needs to be fixed, and we should allow them the purview of their own term of office.
Madam Chair, I do think that these boards are different in a lot of ways, and I appreciate what we're trying to do here, make things a little more sort of have some commonality, but you can push that too far, and I think that some of these boards are probably a lot less emotionally and physically strenuous than others. Mm-hmm. I know this particular board I'm most concerned about is one that we have a hard time getting people to sign up for. So I think leaving them alone is appropriate.
Okay. Is there any opposition? Amendment adopted. And now I think that does all takes care of all the amendments.
You sure? You don't want to go for a 11 or
no,
a 12?
No. You know, Representative Green and his staff, Tom Powers, did a lot of good work on this. And Tom Burns, I think Tom Burns was part of it at some point in time, too. So I would like to thank them for all the work that they have done on this.
Are you ready? Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2058 as amended to the floor to be passed recommendations.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2058 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
We don't have a fiscal revenue on that.
Oh, excuse me, Madam Chair. I withdraw my motion. Madam Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of passing House Bill 2058 as amended without a fiscal statement.
Senator Cruz moves that we suspend the rules so we can adopt or pass out House Bill 2058 without a fiscal. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered.
Okay, now, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2058 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2058 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. And I'll carry the bill.
It's complicated.
All right. I'll carry this one, and we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2058, and we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2059.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2059A requires health professional licensees to report unprofessional conduct of another licensee to regulatory board responsible for licensee. And in your package, you have a dash 8 and a dash 9.
And colleagues, I don't plan to move this bill today, but we still need to have a discussion on two issues. And let's start with the A9 amendments. We've already passed the A8 amendments, but we need to talk about that one. So everyone,
about A9s?
Yeah, let's talk about the A9s right now.
I think the question is a phrase and provided by.
I think if we could have Brian Bowinger, Oregon Medical Association, comes forward, and then I think Inga Deckert from Kaiser, who had concerns about the language.
Madam Chair, I've read the bill again, and I have a question about another piece of language, too. We may need some LC advice on.
All right, and if you want to contact LC. All right, well, you would you please address this two-line amendment, A9s?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Brian Baring with the Oregon Medical Association. The dash nines, A9s, take care of two issues that were we testified on in the last committee about. I'll let Ms. Deckert talk about the prohibited or, and I will address the line two piece, which is the deletion of provided by law and inserting as provided by statute. And this is the section that reads, the obligations imposed by this section are in addition to and not in lieu of other obligations to report prohibited or unprofessional conduct provided by law. There was a concern from some of our folks that law could be interpreted to mean either the statute or administrative rule, and so we just wanted to be crystal clear because our understanding from the work group was that the point of this bill was to standardize this and put what's in statute as the guiding principle, and so we just wanted to substitute the word law for statute.
No, the other way around.
Remove law and replace it with statute. Sorry if I wasn't clear.
He's got a new job. He's confused. So.
State of confusion.
Okay. Is there any questions on this? I thank the proponents of this amendment for coming to me and explaining it to me because I don't have any questions.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Morissette.
I think it's a brilliant move. No, when you think of it, statute, we know what the statute says. We don't know what administrative rules will say, and they change and so on. So I compliment you on picking up on that.
And I think the intent was so that the boards would not come up with something more stringent than what was in statute.
Correct.
All right. And you wanted to have Elsie? She is here.
Potentially. And Brian, and please come forward. And this may be just me not having enough knowledge base. I've asked a couple of attorneys this question. They couldn't answer it for me, so I wanted to get the answer if I could. Here. On page 2, again, line 21.
Line 21?
Yeah. It says, a licensee who is convicted of a misdemeanor or a felony. The question becomes for me, there are different classes of misdemeanors, and I am not aware of what those classes really are. And I'd like to have an idea that if someone gets a traffic ticket, does he have to call his board up and report? I know there's Class C misdemeanors, and I suppose there's a Class C. There must be a Class A and a B. So, I mean, what is a misdemeanor in this state? How low does that language take us?
Chairman Sanderson, Senator Bates, I believe that a traffic ticket would be a violation, right, which is not a misdemeanor.
Right.
I'm not an expert on all the criminal statutes, so I can't give you a total rundown, but a traffic ticket would not.
I'm just guessing. I mean, I want to know more about what.
Madam Chair, may I follow up?
Yes, please.
I want to know exactly what falls in the categories of misdemeanors, and I don't know. And I asked several attorneys real quickly, and they weren't criminal trial lawyers, and Senator Prozanska wasn't available, and so I'm just. Before we get too far down the track, I want to make sure we're not going to ask people to report to their boards some very minor things that really aren't significant.
Senator Bates, there are a very broad range of misdemeanors, and I think that's a fair question. There's misdemeanors run the gamut, and there are things that you might consider minor in that category.
So what I'd like to do, Madam Chair, with your permission, is I'll sit down with Elsie.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll kind of go through what those misdemeanors are. I'll get a little bit of an education, and we may want to say Class C or Class B or something. I don't know, but we'll make sure that language is tight, and we can maybe improve the bill.
Yeah, Madam Chair, because there are some, and you can cross from violation to misdemeanor for the same sort of crime, depending upon, like, if you shoplift a pack of gum or you shoplift a fur coat. You know, I mean, you can rise to different levels. So there is gradations in this, and you're right. We may want to look at just an A and B and let C go or something.
I just don't have enough knowledge. Yeah. I don't know. Or maybe find the way it is. It may be find the way it is. I just want to make sure we don't find ourselves in a funny situation.
Well, we'll be happy to give you as much information as you want, and we can sit down and look at it together.
Yeah, it may be fine.
And introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. Marisa James, Legislative Counsel.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We do have the A8s, and I don't know who brought those forward. A8s, going once. No, you're the A7s. do you, Mr. Shook, know
no,
who
I don't
has
know where
the A8s?
Came from.
It talks about relating to confidentiality and protection of health information. So we're going to need to let someone know regarding the
Actually, I think it just did these. It added that.
Oh, it added the Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board.
That on six,
and the
I believe.
State yes. Mortuary. Well, we'll look over this very carefully to see what the amendment does, and then probably talk with Tom Powers, because it could be that they had that.
Thing,
yeah, it might be. So we'll just talk with Green Lake's office and figure out the A8s. And then, colleagues, we passed out the A7s, and then I think a number of you were talking with the governor's office and saying that it wasn't a precedent to designate a specific test for a board to require of their professional licensees. So we did a little of homework, and we did find that the occupational therapist in ORS 675.270 has a specific test listed in statute, so does the physician's assistant, so does the acupuncturist, so does the radiologic technologist and radiation therapist, athletic trainers, respiratory therapists, and someone said the naturopaths have a specific test also listed. Now, we did pass the A7s, and I'd heard some comment that you know that right now the massage therapists have the NPLEX, if I get them mixed up, close, test, and we just passed an amendment that would all require them to have, I can't remember the name again.
National Certification Board for Therapy, Massage,
yes,
and Body Work Examination?
Yes. That's it.
Just have to remember that.
Along with the board approved. So do you have any opinion on wanting to withdraw that particular amendment? Yes, Senator?
Madam Chair, you know, this is not setting a new precedent, I realize that. But at the same time, there's obviously not a consensus of this among the massage therapists. I'm getting kind of hammered. I frankly don't know much about this. I'm getting hammered on both sides in this question. And if they brought us consensus and said this is what we want, that'd be fine. But there's obviously no consensus, so it feels like one group is kind of moving on another group and using the board as a method of doing it. I'd like to withdraw the amendment, frankly, and let them work this out themselves on the board. It's their board.
Well, I guess my feeling is that we gave direction to the board or the massage therapist to go back and clean up their, no, I'll put it differently, to adjust their scope of practice and to make sure that they, if they're going to include a group that disputes whether or not they should be part of that, to make those decisions before they come back to us. And I frankly think that's what this decision should be made during the interim by the groups. There needs to be a coming together. And I understand that the governor's office representative was unable to be at the last meeting and said that if she had been there, she would have maybe intervened when the meeting got out of hand, perhaps, whatever that means. So she feels the governor, she would like to be involved in the governor's office. The governor's office would like to be part of that discussion and to help them mediate. Now, whether or not we end up with two tests or one test, I think should be decided by that group during the interim. That's the cleanest way of doing it, I think.
Okay. Would Mr. Barrows and Patty Glenn come forward and help us make this decision? And I know you're both opposed, I mean, to each other.
We're just opposed on this issue.
Oh, Marissa, I think we're fine. Okay, thank you.
Now, if the motion's getting, I guess, I'm going to hand the motion over.
I'm just reading all of these that are in statute, and they are all tests administered by the national organization for the groups so far. So,
But it is a specific test. Yeah.
So, Mr. Bears, you brought this amendment to us, and just review again the reasoning behind it.
I'm happy to, Madam Chair. For the record, Dave Barrows, representing the National Certification Board, and as Senator Bates said, all the other stuff. This is the exam that is given in more than 30 states. It is statutorily mandated in 10 states, plus two other states require that their examinees take a nationally certified exam. I'm going to put this as carefully as I can, Madam Chair, members of the committee. With inadequate notice, this board, Oregon's Board of Massage Therapy Licensing, took our exam and extracted it from their rule and placed in its place another exam called the MLATS, which is primarily the exam put together by an organization of the executive directors of which Ms. Glenn is a member. To date, there is no way, there is no public statement that this has ever occurred. There are no minutes. The governor's office has asked for these minutes and never received them. I have asked for these minutes on behalf of my client and never received them. Now the question comes, not the process so much of what brought this forward, but the fact that it happened without any opportunity by my client to come and talk to the board in advance of them making this decision or anything else. So what we have brought to you, we think, is a very middle ground amendment. It does not require the board to remove the MLACS exam, the new one. It merely says they must give applicants for a license to practice massage therapy in Oregon an opportunity to take the national certification examination and any other exam approved by the board. It does not mandate our exam. It only says the applicant should have the choice. A certification exam is here. A licensure exam is something less. That's all this amendment does, is give applicants an opportunity to make that choice, not be forced to take only the MLACS exam. And then if they want to have certification, they have to go and take another exam again. And I would also say there are serious issues of reciprocity by people who have taken the national exam, as applicants used to do in Oregon, our exam, as they used to do in Oregon, and then trying to come to this state since the massage board has instituted the MLACS exam. They will not recognize the taking of the National Certification Board exam following the date, which we're not even sure what that is, but whatever the date is, of the new exam. So I think that puts people in coming across the border, and you talked about that, Madam Chair, in an earlier hearing about how the reciprocity from Virginia, how helpful that was to you. I know as a person who took the bar exam, I sure don't ever want to take another one again. I'm guessing Dr. Bates may not want to take sit for his boards again. So this is simply giving a choice to the applicants. That's all we're asking. We're not demanding, not saying it has to be ours. We're just saying let, if they want to add their exam too, and applicants want to take that, perfect. We're fine with that. But we should not eliminate the ability of applicants to take the National Certification Board exam.
Thank you. Questions?
Yes, Madam Chair. Yes. The other board exam they're using, they're enforcing right now is called what again?
The other examination?
What was the name of it?
MLACS.
MLACS.
And I may not say any better than anyone else. Ms. Glenn.
That was the one we had originally.
Is that
no.
No, that's
no.
The one that we
the
have
MLACS
now.
Is the state owned and
that's
the state.
The state one.
The one that they have replaced our exam with.
And yours is?
The National Certification Board exam. Again, this is the one. This is the
NCB.
Well known throughout the nation. It was the exam that was here.
Madam Chair?
And
yes.
It has been discarded.
I just want to make sure the nomenclature is right because I want to ask a question about it. Is the MLACS exam a national standardized examination?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, the MLACS is developed by the regulatory community, much like the NCLEX. So it meets all of, which is the nursing's exam developed
by the nursing
community. I want to
make sure this paragraph doesn't eliminate that.
It meets, no, that paragraph creates a problem for that.
You are correct. There is no certifying entity for licensing exams that, because they are owned and operated by the regulatory community. There is a certifying entity for certification exams, and that would be through NCCA or NOCA.
So the MLEX is not something that would meet the definition in this of an examination or another board-approved national standardized examination?
That's true. We would be concerned that that could be called into question. By the way, the language is written on the amendment.
And Madam Chair, if I may, we are concerned about that. It is not a test that is approved by the National Commission for Certifying Agencies. Our test is also offered in Spanish for those who would like to become massage therapists who only speak Spanish. It is a very much more understood and utilized exam throughout the country.
And Ms. Glenn, you had at one point told me the difference between the two tests. Could you just review for the committee the main differences that you see between the two tests?
Absolutely. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Patty Glenn, Executive Director with the Oregon Board of Massage Therapists. Much information, misinformation, I guess, has kind of crossed paths on this issue. The Board of Massage Therapists would definitely like the opportunity to set the record straight, but I will definitely start with your question, which is the difference between the exams. Unfortunately, there are multiple exams, so one of the things that is very unclear here in the amendment that was offered is which exam that the certification board is speaking to. They actually have two separate exams that they administer. At the point in time that Oregon was accepting their exams, we did accept both. They have the national certification exam for therapeutic massage and body work. They also have a secondary exam, the national certification exam for therapeutic massage, which does not include the Eastern medicine and Eastern theory questions. So the amendment may, in fact, not even do what the organization is asking that it would do, which would be to allow their exams to be accepted in the state of Oregon, as it only references a singular exam that includes the bodywork title. The primary difference in the exams is the process by which the exams are written and created and how that content is developed. So for clarification, the Federation of State Massage Therapy Boards was the Federation of State Massage Therapy Boards was formed in 2005, much like the National Council of State Boards in Nursing and the Federation of State Physical Therapy Boards and other organizations of regulatory boards across the country have formed over the years. The Federation of State Massage Therapy Boards was formed to address some very specific needs in this profession, reciprocity and portability being the biggest need. The second largest need in the discussions at the time that we formed the organization was the catastrophic failure of the business structure of the National Certification Board, the lack of service that was being provided, some major issues that were happening in the infrastructure of that organization, and the concern as to whether or not that tool would exist in the future in an effective way to assess entry-level competence. Mr. Barrows is correct in that the way Mr. Williams' testimony from last week, new emerging professions frequently take this path. They come in as certifying bodies that try and elevate or establish some sort of a credential, and then as they become licensed, that path evolves. And certainly nursing has been through that. My mother, who's been a physical therapist for 40-plus years, had the opportunity of being licensed in a state that had high credentials when she was licensed because there was no national state-owned and operated test. So she is victim to that patchwork quilt that exists of being able to move from state to state. This is an evolution of this profession as the regulatory community is working together to address these needs. It is not a slapstick attempt for myself or any organization to come together to oust the National Certification Board or to have any sort of financial gain. I did in my two-page testimony, and it is revised from the one which I had emailed to you yesterday or early this morning, and added a couple more bullet points. But in the packet of information that I provided to you, for the record, since there was some testimony otherwise last week, the last two pages of that packet include copies from the 990 forms from both the Federation of State Massage Therapy Boards as well as the National Certification Board for Therapeutic Massage and Body Work. I feel this is relevant because of the allegation last week that there is either personal financial gain for myself or that somehow the Board of Massage Therapists might actually be gaining revenue by increasing the number of licensees that test through the EmblEx exam, as was alleged last week. You'll see that on the 990s that the chair of their board at that time made $103,000 as a voluntary chair in that within that year, where you will see clearly that the executive directors and board members who serve on the Federation's board of directors receive no form of compensation whatsoever. So I think that is a very important point, that you understand that these individuals who are serving in their state boards, either in the role of executive director or, as in the case with the entire rest of the board at this time, as board members set apart to do their job by Senate or by the legislature or governors across this country, are serving to try and address these needs.
Do you actually, it says here that your title, your president...
At the time of this statement, I was president. That term expired in September of this past year. I'm now just a member of the board.
So you don't spend now 15 hours per week like you did before?
I still probably spend about 15 hours a week, Madam Chair. And that is outside of my office time with the Board of Massage and my personal time.
You don't
working.
Have a life like we don't.
You're correct.
Okay. I think, do you have other comments?
Well, it depends on how much you would like me to kind of provide some additional information. I think the other thing that was of significant concern was the allegation that the EmblEx exam was an easier exam that was brought to your attention last week. And the third page from the back of your packet is a copy of the handouts that were provided this past Friday at the Oregon Board of Massage meeting by the National Certification Board, indicating their pass rates for both the therapeutic massage and bodywork and the therapeutic massage exams. And you'll see that in Oregon in 2000...
No, wait, which one switched then?
I'm sorry, the top, these are both their tests. They have the two different test forms, so this is not the EmblEx. This is the two tests that are administered by the certification board.
By Oregon's board?
No, by Dave Barrow's entity.
You've got to keep it
sorry.
Clear.
By the entity that Mr. Barrows is representing. And you'll see that in Oregon, in 2008, their pass rate was 93% on their therapeutic massage and bodywork, and their pass rate for the therapeutic massage is 76%, which seems a little bit odd to me, given that it technically should be a little bit of a slightly easier test. But nonetheless, those are the pass rates for those two test forms.
And the bottom one is?
Their exam, but it's the exam that doesn't have the Asian bodywork component. The exam for the massage and body, or the EmblEx exam administered by the states, the average pass rate in Oregon is 93%, identical to that of the therapeutic massage and bodywork exam. So the allegation that one test is easier than the other is not an accurate statement.
Well, I know that I would like both exams to be okay for a massage therapist to be able
Thank
to practice in the state of Oregon, but I really want to go with the will of the committee. I think Cindy Roberts sorry, Cindy, wanted to say a word too. And then we won't make that decision. I think this is a lot of information to us, and we will be bringing this bill back next week, and we'll figure out what we're going to pull the amendment or not after I talk with each member. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The camera's moving above your head back and forth. So if I laugh, that's why. Cindy Robert, on behalf of the American Massage Therapy Association in Oregon. And I think it's really important for you to note that I don't have a stake in either holding firm against the process or a stake in I want my test to be used. So I am representative of the group that takes the test, and they have chosen on a national level to pursue the EmblEx as the one exam for all states. And I'll tell you a couple reasons why, because I think it might help you understand why we're seeing this movement. The regulatory boards of each of our states have gotten together to try to put together an exam that they think better establishes the wants, desires, needs, and state safety and health regulations for each state so they can put it into one exam that will have the utmost importability and reciprocity. That is the goal. I know that was important to you, Madam Chair. That is the goal of AMTA. and why they support this MBLEX, because I think it's headed in that direction. I think it's important also to note that my members believe it is a more difficult test and that it more accurately responds to the technology and information that we have today, whereas they see the NCB as an older school test that was great for certification, but not necessarily for practice acts, which is what we're all trying to get in each of our states for health and safety purposes. I think the other difference on this issue is reciprocity. We don't have reciprocity right now. As Mr. Barrow said, there are 30 states currently using the NCB with 50 states. So 30 states are using it, and not well. And reciprocity is not just based on what exam you take. It's based on your schooling, your hands-on, well, that sounds odd, but your hands-on training. It's based on more than just what exam you take. And there are so many discrepancies from state to state that reciprocity is a fallacy at this point. And we're trying to make it on a national level actually happen. And the first thing is to help the schools. The second thing is to help with the hands-on training. The third thing, and the thing that comes before you a little bit premature for us, is the decision on which test every state should take. But because this has come up, because this same move was recently made in North Carolina, AMTA nationally has decided to come out early and say the MBLEX is the one, because it's done by regulatory boards who already have control over the profession. We think they are best suited to figuring out what parameters need more control and making the best test to reflect that.
I think it's nitpicking. I really do. I feel if a massage therapist wants to become a massage therapist and they happen to have taken the certification exam, that we in Oregon should accept that. Be that as it may, I think we have enough information. We will talk. Oh, okay, yeah.
I may have enough information. I want to be sure my information is correct, Madam Chair. And I think the sense here is to allow both exams to be used, not exclude either one of them. And I want to be certain that the language in the DAS-7s, as I read it, probably excludes the other exam because of some of the description of the other exam. Is that correct? Patty, is that correct?
I would need to get my AG's opinion on that to be certain of that, sir.
And just for conjecture here, I'm not saying this is the way we do it, the page 2 of that says the board shall accept passage of the National Certification Board for Therapeutic Massage and Body Work Examination, that's the NCBTMB, I guess. This about gets clear as mud to me, by the way.
I know.
Or any other board-approved, nationally standardized examination, and goes on from there. I would suggest we may want to change that language to another board-approved examination plane, which allows you to have both exams, and the applicant can make the decision which one they want, and as this evolves through the future, they may come down to one. So if you just knocked out national standardization and ended the sentence at after examination, that might allow both exams in. You guys can figure this thing out as the years go by and we get more knowledge.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, if I may, I believe that's exactly what this language says, and Legislative Council believes that's exactly what this language says, and our attorney believes that's exactly what the language said. And so the suggestion by Ms. Glenn, I'm sure in good faith, that we haven't spelled that out correctly, I think is inaccurate. I think we have made it very clear that the board has to allow an applicant for licensure to take the National Certification Board, my client's exam, which is, my client is a nonprofit, by the way, and another exam if the board so chooses, and they could pick the MLEX. So now the decision is going to be made by the person who wants to practice massage therapy. And that doesn't seem to me to be an unreasonable thing, as the chair has indicated. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm not an attorney, and Mr. Barrows may well be correct. I just wanted to clarify this because it is not clear to me right now if that's true.
Okay.
And he may be correct, I may well be wrong, but there's, I think, simpler language gets us there that we all can understand.
Yes. And then we need to move on.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm still trying to figure out what Cindy Roberts said.
Madam Chair, Senator, you're not the first person to ask me to
go back and explain myself.
I think it's important for you to know that, and Madam Chair, you said this is nitpicking. And, you know, actually, I told both Ms. Glenn and Mr. Williams when he was here that I feel like I'm in high school, mm-hmm. and I'm being pulled in both directions. And Senator Morissette will tell you that on the Practice Act end of this, we've been pulled in a lot of directions, too. And it is very difficult, and people are very opinionated about massage, which just... frankly, shocks me. But
just being Senator Morissette's committee.
And I've been there for so many times. But I think it's important for you to know, first and foremost, more than anything, I wasn't part of the process, so I can't vouch for how it was done. I've seen Mr. Barrow's concerns about how it was done. And frankly, that would concern me too. However, I don't think that coming to the legislature and asking for this kind of statement in statute is an appropriate way to handle it when things have not gone your way. That being said, I do, in fact, my first choice was to have this committee, someone on this committee, instruct OBMT to start this process over again, show it was done fairly, show it was done correctly, show it was done with the right public process, public input, and then move on with whatever decision was made.
Okay. Well, with that, let's just, I think Erin Olson, did she want to say something?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Yes, thank you.
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Erin Olson. I'm an attorney in private practice in Portland, Oregon. I'm here on behalf of one of my clients, whose name is Catherine Edson, as well as a young woman named Gina Centioli. Both of those young women are the reason that House Bill 2059 is before you. They were both molested by an anesthesiologist named David Burleson, and one of their molestations could have been prevented had this law been in effect at the time. This law is about public safety. I want to say that again. This law is about public safety. This is not a law that was drafted to make uniform the laws across the boards. This was a law that was drafted to protect patients and clients from the criminal acts and acts that harm them that might be perpetrated by healthcare providers. I've summarized the history of this bill in my written testimony, and I'm not going to repeat that here. I'm here because I listened to the online version of the committee testimony last week, and I'm concerned that this bill might get waylaid.
It won't.
Thank you.
I'm in charge.
Just briefly about the proposed amendments. I did communicate with Mr. Parrott. I was on the working committee, as was Mr. Parrott and the gentleman from Kaiser, Kathleen Haley, who's in the room today. And we worked very hard to reach some compromises, and we didn't, at the end, agree on some things, one of which was whether this statute would trump the administrative rules and the statutes that exist, particularly the administrative rules that the boards have enacted themselves. I did not believe they should, because I think the Board of Medicine is an expert on doctors, and the Board of Veterinarians, I'll get to in a minute, but they're an expert on treating animals, and that there may be a need to regulate the conduct of particular healthcare professionals. With that said, I don't want that amendment to hold up this committee either. With or without the amendment, I guess it's dash nines now, I think the bill will protect people going forward.
Have you seen the dash eights and the nines?
I have seen the dash. The dash eights are a bit curious. I did ask that EMTs be added to the list of those. My concern, and it's not a huge concern, but we use the word patient and client to define the reporting requirements, and I want to know who a mortician's client is. Is it the dead person, or is it the dead person's family? There is crimes, abuse of corpse, so I suppose it could be either way. Veterinarians, is the client or the patient, the pet or the family? I don't know. That's the only issue I have with that. I don't really care about adding those two.
Won't affect why you want the bill.
That's correct.
Yes. Okay.
I do want to address Senator Bates' questions about crimes and whether felonies and misdemeanors is too broad. And I can understand why Senator Bates might think that. The concern I have is that, first of all, just briefly, Class A misdemeanors are the most serious. They include driving under the influence, assault in the fourth degree, sexual abuse in the third degree, harassment of a sexual or other intimate part, and I'm talking about the crimes that tends to come up in these situations the most. The problem, if you were to limit it to Class A misdemeanors or a particular class of misdemeanors, is that then an attempt to commit that crime would not be that level of a class. So an attempted assault 4 is a Class B misdemeanor. It's not a Class A misdemeanor. Harassment is a Class B misdemeanor. It's offensive contact, offensive physical contact with somebody. If you were to say, well, we only want Class B misdemeanors and higher, then somebody who attempted that would not be required to report. There are also unclassified misdemeanors, and they include some weird things in the statutes that involve the regulation of, for example, drugs, not controlled substances, but other drugs. And so I think if you start trying to distinguish between the types of arrests that you're going to require reporting of or the convictions, then you're going to run into some areas that you probably wouldn't predict just looking at the criminal code. So with that said, I just ask you to think hard before you try and parse out the types of misdemeanors.
Sure. Yes.
Okay. So attempt. I thought for serious something, an attempt is a B, isn't it?
If you attempt a crime, it drops at one level. So attempted assault 4 is a Class B misdemeanor. Assault 4 is a Class A misdemeanor.
Okay, so what are we capturing in C's that is relevant?
In Class C misdemeanors? An attempted harassment is a Class C misdemeanor. Attempted. Beyond that, there aren't very many that you would probably care about. Criminal trespass, too, is a low-level misdemeanor. Offensive littering.
Okay, I mean, I think that was the point we were questioning is C and then some other weird things, you know. Are we creating more reporting potentially than...
Most Class C misdemeanors are treated as violations at the outset, I mean, at least in Multnomah County. With that said, my concern is just that if you try and draw a line, it's going to be a difficult, it's going to have some unintended consequences, I think.
Does that help you, Don?
Yeah, I think it's something you got to let it get it in law, see how it functions. We find people, you know, reporting things that are, you know, I'm out fishing and I walk across somebody's land inadvertently and someone complains, I have to report to the Board of Medical Examiners. They're probably not going to care too much.
No, I suspect they won't care.
But I mean,
if it's your second Dewey, which is a Class A misdemeanor, they might care.
I think Deweys are reportable, number one is. Okay. So, I mean, but I just, what I'm saying, we'll let it roll, I think. I think it's probably we'll leave it the way it is, and then if we find we're running into problems with boards, we can come back and amend the bill in a couple of years.
Okay. My purpose in being here is just to reiterate that this bill was created. It was Representative Greenlick worked with my client, with Katie Edson. Gina testified before the interim committee, and the purpose is public safety. And I understand that a nice consequence is uniformity, but the purpose is public safety. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. With that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2059, and I'll open a work session on House Bill 3022.
Madam Chair, House Bill 3022 was heard last week. Permits certain health professional regulatory boards to adopt rules that permit practitioners to prescribe or dispense antibiotic drugs to partners of patients without examining a partner for treatment of sexually transmitted diseases, and we have no amendments.
Okay, we were going to consider amendments, and I think with Senator Bates, but we decided not to do that. And so if everyone is okay, not necessarily we'll say yes on the bill, but if everyone is all right with the bill, we can move forward. And again, we didn't have the insurers actually give testimony in opposition.
Madam Chair,
yeah.
I had two issues that I wanted to explore, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
And one was with the insurers or the very issue you're talking about, payment, and they don't have a problem with that at all.
Mm-hmm. And the med malpractice.
And med malpractice is something has not ever come up in any other state. They don't think it's a major issue because of the type of thing we're doing here. However, I'm looking forward to a robust discussion in the near future about medical malpractice issues.
We all have
them. Madam Chair,
yes.
Can I ask Senator Bates a question?
Yes.
Yes.
Actually, not Senator Bates. I want to ask Dr.
Bates a question. He just left.
My concern with this is writing a script for somebody you've never seen. And I mean, that causes me some concern about this. Would you? I mean, you know, because there can be drug reactions on almost anything, and if you're writing a script for somebody that you've never seen, you have no way of knowing. You know, I guess I would kind of look at it as my wife gets the flu, or she gets something and she gets a prescription, and then I get the same thing, and so I just take her drugs, and I'm not sure that's necessarily appropriate.
It actually isn't, okay?
Okay, but that's my issue
and,
with
yeah,
this.
Yeah, and the way I, you know, my personal practice, when I run into these issues, and I do, I actually get the other person on the phone and talk to him, and to see him about drug reactions and medications are on. I get a quick history, and if he's treating with another physician, I ask his permission to treat with another physician. However, it is one of the barriers, I believe, to writing these drugs, and I think a lot of physicians are going to refuse to write the second prescription, and I would not blame them at all for doing that. And I would have loved to have seen something, some form of liability protection in this bill.
Well, Madam Chair, it's just not liability protection in this. I think it's a safety issue from my perspective a little bit. I'm just really hesitant about this. I think I understand what the intent here is. It's a good intent. I'm just not sure this is from my perspective, the way to get there.
It's a good versus the perfect. Again, it's a tough decision.
Being a public health nurse, I was a nurse that would counsel a number of patients who had sexually transmitted diseases. And inevitably, we could not always get the partner back in. So the client would get it, be treated, but then she'd get it right back again because we wouldn't be treating the partner. So
she had leverage she could have used and chose not to.
Well, that's not how the real world works, Senator Cruz.
Might have been beaten.
So anyway, we are in work session. Do I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3022 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3022 to the floor, with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
Senator Moore?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
No.
Chairman Tennyson?
Aye. Motion carries, and Senator Rosenbaum will carry the bill. I will close the work session on House Bill 3022 and open a work session on House Bill 2794. This is our last bill.
Madam Chair, 2794-1 requires health benefit plans to provide coverage of human papillomavirus vaccine for female beneficiaries who are 11 years of age or older, and the dash one put an upper limit of 26 years.
Okay. I got to find the bill. Sorry. 3797.
Have we adopted the ones yet or no?
It's a very good question. I don't think we have.
Let me find the
I think
dash
we discussed
one.
Them, but I don't think we formally adopted them.
I have the A in growth, but why don't I have the dash one?
Like SIM?
Yes, I need the dash one.
It adds the upper limit of 26.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't have that. All right, so the dash ones, everybody is this is what the insurers brought before us. This is what CDC recommends, 11 to 26 for these people to be treated. So I'm entertaining a motion for adoption of the dash ones.
Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendment to House Bill 2794.
Senator Cruz moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2794. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2794 as amended to the floor to due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2794 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, again, both with my heart or my head, in this context, with businesses that are in acute financial stress, trying to maintain health care and adding mandates, I'd love to vote with my heart, but...
Did I say the wrong number?
I will not.
Hold it.
Madam Chair?
Yeah. Oh, no, let him finish.
Okay.
I'm concluded, Madam Chair.
I believe I may have said the wrong number. I'm dyslexic at times when I'm tired. It's House
Bill. No. We are in 3097.
We're on
2797. Never mind. Thank you. Is that what I it's said? It's late in the day. It's almost
5. Yeah. You didn't say that? I said the
did
wrong
we?
Bill?
I'm afraid I might have said the wrong bill. So let's.
You're the one that said the wrong bill.
Okay. Madam Chair.
So we're on 20.
I withdraw every motion I've made.
For the day?
Forever? No, just in this work session. Okay. Madam Chair, I withdraw the motions, and I would move the Dash One Amendment to House Bill 2794.
Very good.
Okay. So, yes.
I really want to make a comment here that might change a vote, but probably won't. I have routinely voted for mandates that are preventative in nature and in the long run save money in the healthcare industry. And this bill does that. It significantly reduces the chances for cervical cancer. And as a result, the long-term savings should be significant with this. And that's the way this vaccine and why that vaccine was developed, not only from the point of view of what it does for individuals, that's the right thing to do, but it's a cost saver in the long run. And it's a mandate that is preventative in nature, and therefore, I think you might, members of this committee might feel comfortable voting on it from the basis not only it's the right thing to do from their heart, but from your pocketbook, it might be the right thing also.
Madam Chair, if I may, just as a follow-up, I don't see in my bill file what the upfront cost would be. Did I miss that?
Well, OMIP currently provides the virus. We have the fiscal analysis.
Right.
But the cost, what is the cost of the vaccine and how many people would be using it?
150.
I believe it was 150 per shot and there were two shots.
That's right.
I believe that is correct. It's $150 per for two doses.
Actually, I think
per dose.
And it's just so you know, it stings.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Beth Slater with Providence Health Plan. There are three shots. The average cost is about $150 per shot, and it does sting. Okay.
Madam Chair, before the song leaves, could I ask a question?
Sure. I may not know the answer, but I'll try.
Well, let me ask the question anyway, because I don't know the answer. Is there a cost analysis done on this, not only what the cost is for the vaccines, what the cost be to the medical care system for those, but what the downstream savings might be by essentially eliminating cervical cancer in our society and possibly requiring less pap smears and less examinations. Has anyone tried to model that yet?
The CDC may have done that. I don't have any concrete evidence. Logic would suggest that it saves money, but we haven't tried to quantify it in any way, and I don't think that Providence... They haven't given me any numbers to share, so.
Thank you very much. Sure. I'm sure we might want to get that information if we possibly could. It may not be available.
All right.
I can look around and
see what I can find for
you. Get that back to the committee.
Sure.
I don't want to hold up the bill for that. But,
okay,
yeah.
So
okay, now I want to make sure that we're in work session on House Bill 2794. So we are now in work session on House Bill 2794.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash One Amendment to House Bill 2794.
All right. Senator Cruz moves the Dash Ones to House Bill 2794. Is there any discussion?
I'm still a yes, by the way. Even though
clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates.
Aye.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
Senator Warren.
No.
Vice Chair Cruz.
This is just on the Dash One.
Oh, excuse me. Roll call on the Dash One?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
I thought maybe someone would be a no.
Okay.
No.
No, I'm okay.
Okay.
Yes, on the Dash One.
Okay. Aye.
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 Thank you.
Okay, amendment adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2794 as amended to the floor to be passed.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2794 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates.
Aye.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
Senator Moore.
No.
Vice Chair Cruz.
No.
Chairman Osmond.
Aye. Motion carries. Senator Rosenbaum will carry this bill and...
You did it right this time, right?
I close the work session on House Bill 2794 and are we finished?
Speak up, Cassandra.
Madam Chair, just to clarify, on the 26th,
yes.
Next Tuesday, we will bring back 2702, which is the psychologist, and we'll bring back 2059A, which is the one we just
all right.
talked about.
That sounds good.
Okay.
All right. With that, we're adjourned.